You know, my expectation is that this will be a drain on the Chinese economy long term. It's not going to look that attractive.
Could the coronavirus drag down the global economy? We'll explore. It's Wednesday, February 26th, and this is VOA Asia. I'm Doug Bernard in Washington. Also ahead, President Trump says an India trade deal is close at hand. Hong Kong booksellers convicted for selling gossip and cleaning the oceans of plastic. It's all on today's VOA Asia. Well, the preliminaries are over and the 2020 Democratic presidential hopefuls are off to the races. And as they say in the biz, the track is fast. VOA senior national correspondent Jim Malone joins us now. Jim, we have, it seems like, everything coming up all at once. Tuesday night, there's going to be a debate between the Democratic hopefuls. And then on Saturday, there's going to be a Democratic primary in South Carolina. What are the importance of, less so the debate, and more this primary? And who does it matter to?
Well, the South Carolina primary probably is a make-or-break test for former Vice President Joe Biden. Biden has long been relying on the support of African-American voters. They're a big constituency in South Carolina for Democrats. If he cannot basically win that race, and hopefully convincingly, he may have some problems moving ahead. Bernie Sanders has a lot of momentum right now. He's won the first three contests. The last contest in Nevada, he had a huge margin of victory. So the Democratic moderates, Biden among them, Michael Bloomberg, et cetera, have to find a way to slow him down.
You know, I'm used to candidates getting a bounce out of a early contest, say out of Iowa or New Hampshire or maybe even Nevada. How much of a bounce is it possible to have out of South Carolina when just a few days later on Tuesday, it's quote unquote Super Tuesday, and a massive cache of delegates are going to be awarded?
Like more than 1,300 on that one day, 14 states holding primaries. No, you're right, Doug. Even if Biden, say, were to get somewhat of a bounce out of South Carolina, how much would it help him? Don't forget, under our system, too, places like California and other states, some of them are already voting. They vote early by mail, so they're not susceptible to the late changes in the race. And again, Bernie Sanders seems well-positioned to do better in a lot of these states than many of his competitors right now. But I think that's why this Tuesday debate is important, to see if moderates can land some blows on Bernie Sanders and at least try to slow down the momentum, because right now he's running away with the field.
We keep hearing some in the chattering class saying that there's a Bernie panic going on right now among Democrats, the Democratic field, and the Democratic Party at large. Is it possible that we might start seeing a number of candidates drop out after South Carolina or after Super Tuesday, kind of clearing the field for more of a one-on-one contest?
Well, it seems more likely after Super Tuesday, if people like Amy Klobuchar, Pete Buttigieg, and some of the others, Tom Steyer, don't register some strong showings in some states, what is their reason to continue on? So, yes, I think that is a possibility. I do think that the kind of mainstream leadership of the Democratic Party is befuddled at the moment. This is completely out of their hands. And we are looking at a situation, has the party moved further left than party leaders have even realized? And I think as the Sanders train keeps going on, that question will become louder. And is there enough time at this point to even rally around one moderate alternative to Bernie Sanders? Michael Bloomberg will have a lot to show in the Tuesday debate. His first debate performance was very weak, and he needs to have something to build on the money he spent in all those Super Tuesday contests.
And finally, just to be clear for our listeners, there is no mechanism in the Democratic Party for party leaders to sort of, you know, tell people to get out of the race, get out of the way.
No, that's right. It's up to them, and their money usually dries up. But in this case, they've been able to fundraise off the internet, so some of them are hanging in.
We will see. VOA senior national correspondent Jim Malone, and we have complete campaign coverage at voanews.com. These are among the top Asia headlines you'll find right now on voanews.com. U.S. President Donald Trump says his administration is moving closer to a peace deal with the Taliban. Floods that have crippled much of Indonesia's capital worsened on Tuesday, inundating thousands of homes and buildings. The United States wants Afghan President Ashraf Ghani to defer his second-term inauguration over concerns that it could inflame an election feud with his political rival. And the United States and 10 nations from ASEAN are eyeing a special summit in March to boost ties. You can read and watch more on VOA Asia Facebook, Twitter, and voanews.com. VOA Asia continues. Rights activists in Hong Kong and abroad on Tuesday denounced a Chinese court's decision to sentence former Hong Kong bookseller Guai Minhai to 10 years in prison on charges of illegally providing intelligence to foreign entities. The 55-year-old was a Swedish national based in Hong Kong, where he sold books critical of China's political leadership. Mainland police seized him in 2018 on a Beijing-bound train in the presence of Swedish diplomats. Amnesty International China researcher Patrick Poon suggested that because of the focus on COVID-19, Gui's sentencing would garner little attention.
Because his case is so famous, and everyone is so concerned about the case because it's not just an ordinary case about freedom of expression. It's also about how a foreign national could be treated, not just on Chinese soil, but also outside.
A spokesman for China's foreign ministry said that Gui's rights and interests have been fully guaranteed. Swedish Foreign Minister Anna Linde said that they have not seen either the indictment or any information about it beforehand and were not able to provide assistance.
We continue to ask for the immediate release of the Swedish citizen Gui Minhai and also to get consular access and for a Swedish doctor to be able to visit Gui Minhai.
A statement from the court in Ningbo said Gui would not be appealing the sentence and he has asked to have his Chinese citizenship reinstated. His daughter and supporters have called for his release, saying he's a victim of illegal political persecution. Gui is the highest of five booksellers who disappeared between October and December in 2015, all linked to a Hong Kong bookshop famous for its gossipy texts on Chinese political leaders. Happening now in Asia, Japanese Prime Minister Shinzo Abe says the success of new measures, such as letting employees work from home, will determine whether the country can control its coronavirus outbreak. Japan has 850 confirmed cases, the third highest number behind China and South Korea. And we're happy you're with us on VOA Asia. U.S. President Donald Trump says that he's optimistic about the prospects of a trade deal with India. Trump met Tuesday in New Delhi with Indian Prime Minister Narendra Modi as he wrapped up his two-day visit to India. For more, our Steve Miller spoke with VOA White House Bureau Chief Steve Herman, who's traveling with the president.
Well, we've heard a lot from the president himself about this, and I think the way you can summarize his 36 hours here is that there was a lot of talk about trade, but no big deal. And both sides are optimistic that eventually they will reach a conclusion and create some gigantic trade deal. At least that's the way that President Trump views it. There was the expected announcement about the completion of an agreement for India to buy helicopters and some other military equipment from the United States. That's worth about $3 billion. And I think we can see more of that ahead because both Prime Minister Modi and President Trump said that they were looking at expanding cooperation on counterterrorism, cybersecurity, and maritime security. Trump calling the relationship with India now truly stronger than ever before.
Any indication from the White House on when the next round of talks may commence to get around to that?
Well, according to both President Trump and Prime Minister Modi, they are talking. I have also been speaking to officials both from the Indian government and the U.S. government, and they're essentially blaming each other for the lack of a deal during the time that the president visited. The Indians felt that the Americans were really pushing them and that the Indians didn't want to have this visit come off without the deal being announced. But the Indian view was they're in no hurry. And that language has also been echoed by President Trump himself when I asked him on Air Force One on Monday about what was the holdup on it. And so there's a lot of speculation, especially among the analysts, that from this point on, it's going to be a slow and careful process. And we may not see anything until after the November presidential election, very similar to the much-touted Phase 2 U.S.-China trade agreement.
That was VOA White House Bureau Chief Steve Herman. Also today, at least 10 people were killed and about 130 injured in clashes between opposing groups in the Indian capital. It was the deadliest riots in the city since protests against a new citizenship law began approximately 2 months ago. India's capital has been a hotbed of protests against the new Citizenship Amendment Act, which eases the path of non-Muslims from three neighboring Muslim-dominated countries to gain Indian citizenship. You're listening to VOA Asia.
VOA Asia is on Twitter. Follow us at VOA Asia for developing stories in Asia, perhaps close to you. Our Twitter feed also has updates on programs you can hear and see, with links to easily find them. VOA Asia Twitter, we're always online for you.
This news from VOA Asia, U.S. First Lady Melania Trump relaxed Tuesday by meditating with students participating in a happiness class in the Indian capital. The class curriculum dovetails with her Be Best initiative to teach children to be kind. Visit VOA Asia Facebook each day for top stories. This is VOA Asia.
This is Businessy. I'm Ira Melman. A small factory in Malaysia's capital is preparing thousands of ready-to-eat halal meals, from fried rice to chicken biryani, to be shipped off to Japan for 2020's biggest sporting event. Food firms from Muslim-majority Malaysia are expected to be the biggest beneficiaries of a rush of Muslim travelers to Tokyo during the Olympic and Paralympic Games between July and September. The packaged halal food is expected to be sold through vending machines, supermarkets, and kiosks in the Olympic Village. My chef boss, Ahmad Husani Husan, said,
"We went there about a year ago to talk with these Japan Olympic people and some supply in Japan. There are 30 to 40% athletes and spectators are Muslim, and they need halal food. And the halal food is not rice only. They're looking into Western, Chinese, Indian, even South Africa. So these are what we are developing."
My chef aims to triple its revenue to 4.5 million ringgit, about 1 million US dollars. It is already in talks with Japanese retailer Aeonco to jointly develop a line of ready-to-eat halal meals and snacks. Malaysia's halal trade has so far lagged behind non-Muslim nations such as the United States, China, and Brazil. The value of the global halal market is projected to reach $2.6 trillion by 2023, nearly double 2017 levels, according to Dublin-based data firm Research and Markets. Residents in Shanghai have said the situation in the Chinese financial hub is still tense, and it will take time for the city to come back on track since the outbreak of the coronavirus in mainland China in late January. Apple recently reopened its retail stores in Shanghai with reduced working hours. The company extended its retail store closures while it worked toward opening its corporate offices and contact centers in the country.
Probably still need some time to come back to normal life. Actually, everyone is still feeling nervous. Looking at the people on the street and friends around me, some people still cover themselves up securely. I think the situation is still quite intense. It will take time to go back to normal.
Starbucks Reserve Roastery and some Starbucks stores remain closed in the city at the time of this report.
Of course, daily goods are still available in supermarkets, but it is impossible to go to the shopping malls to buy, for example, clothes or something else. For instance, the Starbucks next to me has been closed for quite a long time. I work nearby and used to buy a cup of coffee when passing by, but now I don't buy any food or drinks on the road. I buy them all in supermarkets.
For Business Scene, I'm Ira Melman.
This news break from VOA Asia. A Christian woman acquitted of blasphemy after spending 8 years on death row in Pakistan said she's going to request asylum in France. Asia Bibi will receive her diploma Tuesday as a citizen of honor of the city of Paris. You can visit VOA Asia on YouTube, Instagram, and Twitter. This is VOA Asia. Now on VOA Asia, the growing spread of the coronavirus has rattled stock markets, with indexes experiencing sharp losses in every continent. Authorities in China and other hard-hit countries have enforced lockdowns that have paralyzed production, interrupted supply chains, and disrupted tourism and other key service sectors. VOA's Ardita Dunalari examines risks to the global economy if the coronavirus becomes a pandemic, as some health experts fear it might.
Stock markets from the United States to Asia and Europe have been hit hard as health authorities confirm new pockets of coronavirus infection from the Middle East to Europe.
The market is now coming to recognize that this epidemic has far from peaked. It now looks like it's spreading, and it's going to be causing a lot of disruptions to global supply chains, to the travel industry, to tourism, to a whole lot of things.
Coronavirus has triggered widespread fear and increasingly severe reactions from authorities in scores of countries, imposing lockdowns with paralyzing effects on commerce, especially in China, the world's second largest economy.
What we have in China is a situation where 150 million people are locked down. You know, so these people who went home for the vacation, for the New Year vacation, they now can't return to work.
As companies feel the impact, so too will consumers.
We're going to see real economic impacts from this outbreak. We've already seen it, for example, when Apple says that there's going to be a palpable impact on its ability to produce iPhones in the near term.
Some believe the economic impact will be intense but short-lived. Analyst Mark Hamrick likens coronavirus to a hurricane. Once it passes, recovery begins and activity gradually returns to normal.
For investors who are only focused on the short term, these are very real impacts. For investors who are focused on the intermediate and long terms, they're going to look beyond this and say, we will live to invest and fight another day.
But researcher Desmond Lochman believes the impact on China will be more long-lasting, with companies looking to diversify their supply chains so they can be less reliant on China in the future.
Companies will draw lessons from this experience, you know, my expectation is that this will be a drain on the Chinese economy long term. It's not going to look that attractive for foreign investment.
Coronavirus won't be the last economically disruptive pathogen to spread across borders and continents. The question, analysts say, is what lessons nations and companies draw from the outbreak and whether the global economy becomes more resilient to future shocks. Ardita Dunelari, VOA News, Washington.
This is Science in a Minute.
Astronomers using a variety of space and ground-based telescopes say they have spotted a very rare system of three monster black holes that are on the path to a spectacular collision and merger. The triple black hole system was discovered at the center of three galaxies that had merged with each other. This trinary system is said to be located about a billion light years away and are each separated by distances that range between 10,000 to 30,000 light years. Astronomers say they found evidence that the giant black holes are actively feeding on surrounding material. The system was first spotted by the ground-based Sloan Digital Sky Survey in New Mexico. NASA space telescopes such as WISE, Chandra, Hubble, and NuSTAR were also used to gather data on the triple black hole system. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
Every year, around 12 million tons of plastic waste are dumped into the world's oceans. But now a group of fishermen in Barcelona, Spain, have begun an innovative new project in which they're given financial support to catch plastic. Henry Ridgewell reports.
5 o'clock on a cold February morning. Carlos Martin and his crew steer the Bonamar 2 out of Barcelona's port into the dark waters of the Mediterranean. Year by year, the job is getting tougher. Plunging stocks mean the nets are no longer stuffed with fish. Increasingly, it's plastic waste that's being hauled on board. Martin says, I put it down to the rivers that carry a lot of garbage. More plastic accumulates near the mouths of the rivers. Martin sails further from the shore to avoid the waste, further adding to his costs. We separate the solid plastic and we bring it back to land, he says, but the cellulose plastic gets hooked onto the knots of the nets. So when it's wet and caked with mud, this adds extra weight to the fishing nets. The net does not function properly in relation to its height in the water, and it takes on mud, causing the net to break because it weighs so much. The local government has come up with a novel solution. The fishermen will become the front line in the battle against ocean plastics. Initially, 1 million euros of taxpayers' money from the European Union and the Catalan government will support dozens of fishermen like Martin. They won't receive any money, but instead practical measures to help them haul in the plastic waste. Sergi Tudela is General Director of Catalonia Fisheries.
With these funds, they can improve what they need to carry on board in order to, you know, the boxes or all the facilities they need in order to cope with the problem. And then, of course, at the same time, to characterize, to carry out studies to characterize the origin, the specificities of this marine litter. We are hopeful that if we are successful in this project, right, that this project could be replicated in other areas in the Mediterranean.
The amount of plastic waste on Spanish beaches has grown by 65% in just 6 years, according to government figures. Martin says the fishing community now understands the scale of the problem. Before, we didn't see it that way, he says. We took it and threw it back into the water. We had no conscience. I think that in a few years here, we have become very aware. Nothing is thrown into the water. We collect everything and bring it back to shore. Abandoned fishing gear makes up a big proportion of the estimated 8 to 12 million tons of plastic that are dumped into the world's oceans every year. Martin and his fishing community are determined to change the industry's image and be part of the global effort to clean up our oceans. Henry Ridgewell for VOA News.
And that's VOA Asia for Wednesday. We'll be back on Thursday. We hope you'll join us then.